Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
It was a private ambulance company. A trainee paramedic applied. It was later uncovered they had an issue dealing with dead people.
My experience with the RNLI, unfortunately, is something that's a very sad part of the work that we sometimes do. People deal with it in all kinds of different ways. You know, there's support available, there's counselling, people meditate, very dark humour, you know, whatever it is, everyone's got their own way of getting through these things.
A husband and wife who worked together in quite a small, concise business, and the husband had an affair with someone who was very junior.
I often get asked in this situation then, right, we've determined somebody's got to go. How do we decide who's going? Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Ooh, back again in the hot seats, the red seats.
We are. This doesn't feel so fresh anymore.
No, it doesn't.
Still three times. So here we are, and it's one of your favourite subjects.
SOSR,
S-O-S-R, the sum of the substantial reason dismissal.
I was about to intercept and say I do know what it stands for, I just choose not to.
Well, we can test your knowledge as we go through.
So. Excellent, I look forward to it. We'll finish on a pop quiz.
Yeah, so welcome to another episode of HRER. I'm Alyssa Thursfield and this is...
Ollie Robinson. We are your hosts and today's a bit different.
It is a bit different. We're kind of departing from the format a bit. I mean, we've still got client queries.
We have.
But we have two of them.
And they're a little bit shorter.
Shorter, but I think we've kind of, I think there's a lot we can kind of talk about here. And like, I think recently as well, we've discussed some quite sensitive topics. People often like that we talk about the ridiculous and we can have a bit of a laugh. And we've, you know, we have had some serious stuff to get through. I think in this one, there is some stuff that we can kind of poke some fun at.
Good.
So that we can, capture, as Michael said to me this week, find some personality for some of our social media posts. Wow. So maybe we can inject some personality into this week.
That's, knowing him, that sounds insulting. That sounds pretty. And coming from him as well, that's rich. I had Jim, our sales guy today, not today, last week, he told me that he met with a customer who they were speaking about the podcast. Mm-hmm. And...
Obviously, I love that, by the way. I love that it gets discussed.
Time,
it's brilliant.
Every time. I was on a meeting with him the other day, an implementation meeting, and the woman on the other end was like, oh my God, you're the guy from the podcast. I was like, well, I'm not. Like, this is my actual job. I just do the podcast, you know, ad hoc. But yeah, this woman, she obviously knows who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because...
Obviously.
You've got, like, you're clouted now. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn, like, algorithm loves you. Me, not so much. She thought I was a DJ, which I think is a compliment, like, because DJs are quite fashionable, like, whatever. I think I'm quite fashionable.
Are they?
But she seemed to pick up on me laughing at inappropriate things.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I thought was like, I should probably, like, keep on top of that, but today I've got free reign.
Pass it through your mum filter. Your mum's always on the money with this stuff, so yeah, check with your mum.
She'll love that you've said that as well.
Anyway, we better talk about some content.
We better crack on. Again, these aren't like emails as such, they're just situations that we're going to talk about, so.
These sound very out there. These really happened. So yeah, they're not the specific email. I don't think they're the specific emails, just, but these, again, real scenarios that we have dealt with.
It's detailed. So the first one we're going to look at today, it was a private ambulance company. A trainee paramedic applied, didn't disclose it, and it was a normal application as far as I'm aware. But as they got to grips with the job, it was later uncovered they had an issue dealing with dead people.
More than an issue, frightened of dead people.
Okay.
This, say trainee paramedics, so they were going through the degree process. Right. And during that period, so there's different levels of what you may have on an ambulance vehicle. So you have your drivers, technicians, full-blown paramedics, and then your advanced practitioners and things like that. So this person, I think, was technician level. So they're not a full-blown paramedic.
Okay.
She was at paramedic college, university, doing
school,
her degree.
Whatever.
Yeah. Doing her qualifications and getting some really good relevant experience with this private ambulance company as a technician. Unfortunately, this, you know, it's part of the nature of the emergency services.
Who'd have thought?
They do deal with dead people. That's part of particularly the role for ambulances that can be used for transportation, for collection. Sometimes people unfortunately pass away on ambulances, in private homes, care homes, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a fact of life. People die, bodies don't move themselves. They have to be moved around by suitably trained people.
They do.
That sometimes falls to the ambulance service. So I think she'd been on the job a couple of weeks, which was remarkable. She'd been there a couple of weeks without having come across a dead person, frankly. You know, it's given the nature of the work. Mm. And they'd gone to a hospital and they'd been asked to transport somebody who'd passed away. And she stood outside the room. She said, "I can't go in there. There's a dead person in there." And her colleague was, "Well, of course there's a dead person in there. We're here to collect," said dead person. Yeah. "And we're going to take them where they're supposed to be." She said, I can't go in there. I'm afraid of dead people." Mm. At which point, I believe there was a minor altercation where the colleague was sort of like, "What?
Frustrated.
Like, what are you doing in this?"
Shocked.
You know, as inappropriate probably was to say, "What are you doing in this job?
Why are you here?
Why are you here? Why do you even exist? Why are you here if you're not prepared to deal with, handle people who've unfortunately passed away? That's what we deal with." And look, I'm not saying that there isn't an emotional strain that comes with dealing with this sort of thing. My experience with the RNLI, unfortunately, it's something that's a very sad part of the work that we sometimes do. People deal with it in all kinds of different ways. You know, there's support available, there's counselling, people meditate, very dark humour, you know, whatever it is, everyone's got their own way of getting through these things. But this person was saying, "No, I am afraid of dead people."
I mean, I don't know how to feel about the colleague in the situation. I would probably raise my voice a little bit.
Level of frustration, perhaps. I mean, these ambulances are busy. It's a busy environment. There's lots to be done.
Bodies ain't light either. You can't pick up on your own. Dead weight, literally dead
weight. No, it's not. It's not really like a bag with straps that you can sort of fling over your shoulder. And you know, we've got to treat people with dignity and respect. You know, whether they're with us or not. So yes, there is a way that these things are done. It feels like natural conversation almost brings us to, well, this feels like an impossible situation. Where we have someone who the very kind of probably one of the core elements of their job, and they're saying they have a phobia, essentially. "I am afraid of dead people." Have we got an ultimate barrier to this person being able to conduct their role? Is it reasonable to keep this person away from dead people? We can't stop people passing away, unfortunately, on a job. You know, if an ambulance has been dispatched somewhere, say, "Are you likely to die, sir? It may affect the help we're able to send to you." That's not how ambulances unfortunately work. Fortunately work. Why unfortunately? No, it's fortunately they don't work that way.
Be careful.
So yes, we're in the situation where we're discussing, is this an impossible situation?
Which is where the Sosser comes in.
That's where Sosser comes in. I didn't just call it Sosser. S-O-S-R, which means, Ollie?
Some other substantial reason.
There we go.
One point.
This is one of the favourites, I would say, within the HR and employment law world. So we've got the five fair reasons of dismissal, which by now everyone should be able to recite. So we've got, I'm not going to expect you to do it, Ollie, don't worry.
Capability.
Oh, go on, okay. Capability.
No.
Yeah, there's another
K.
Capability. We often talk about them together, so we don't...
Conduct. There was one beginning with S. Was there?
We're literally talking about it now.
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So S-O-S-R.
There's two more. Oh, gosh.
Why else might I get rid of you? So you do something wrong? You're not capable of doing your job? I did not just do that. I did not mean to do that. For the benefit of those who are listening, I did inadvertently just give Ollie the finger. This is so immature. How is this descent? This is because Dawn's not here to produce us today. It's just descended into madness. So we've got, I'm going to start here instead.
Yep.
We've got conduct. We've got capability. We've got S-O-S-R.
We've got...
Why else might I get rid of you?
Conduct, performance.
No, it's under capability thing. Capability. Might not be your fault. Might not be enough work for you to do.
I don't know the name for it.
Redundancy,
okay.
Yeah, and then we've got the one that I won't expect you to know, which is statutory. So we don't ever really go into that. It's a bit of kind of like the ghost reasons. That might be one that we cover in a later session. But we're now into deciding, well, we have an impossible situation and this is where SOSR, some other substantial reason, comes in. So are we saying this person has done something wrong? possibly. Maybe they should have disclosed this at interview, but whatever. The reality is,
we're past that.
Yeah. This person's saying they've got a phobia, so it's not conduct. They're not redundant.
You're working your way through these, aren't you? Like ticking them off one by one. That's how you determine whether...
This is how we want to be finding the right path to be on. So it's not conduct. Their role isn't redundant and there's no statutory reason here. Just take my word for it on that one. So we're now into capability and SOSR. So in previous pods, when we've talked about the overlap between capability and disciplinary, we've covered that quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So are we saying this person's not capable of doing their role?
Yeah, a little bit.
Is this something we could performance manage?
No, surely not.
It's going to be a bit difficult, isn't it? So if I pull you into a performance management meeting and go, I want you to try really, really hard this week not to be frightened of dead people. Mm-hmm. It's going to be kind of difficult. I mean, I might send you for medical assessment, might send you to occupational health. We might talk about coping mechanisms. But the reality is, while you're working, I'm not going to be able to stop exposing you to dead people.
Not in that job.
No, it's going to be unreasonable to expect you to just kind of buck up. And
just get on with it
because, you know, this person's saying they've got a phobia. So capability, probably not. It might feel like it could be an option, but it's probably not the right route.
No.
And naturally, our conversation at the start of this led us to, this feels like an impossible situation. That's kind of where we get the little bit of the breeze, that's kind of going, I'm sure I've heard Alyssa talking about.
It's like a saucer.
Some other substantial reason. Yes, there's a saucer in the freeze. Oh my God, Dawn, come back. We can't do this without you. When we kind of get that feeling that perhaps, you know what, this feels like a really difficult situation. There's some substantial reason why I feel like we've got a blockage here. Mm-hmm. It's likely that we could be starting to consider SOSR.
What accommodations could there isn't really any many accommodations they can make there?
Well, that's the point, that we're in an impossible situation. So when we've got to think about in that process how reasonable we are in making this decision. So unlike the other reasons, we don't have a statutory process to follow. ACAS, so our, you know, all singing, all dancing gold standard that we're supposed to follow that says here's a disciplinary procedure, you must follow this. We don't have one for SOSR. We're just expected to be reasonable. But if we don't get someone to a meeting to kind of talk around the issue, if we just dismiss and go, right, that's SOSR, off you go, we're going to struggle to show we've been reasonable. So we want to sit someone down and say, well, okay, tell me a bit about the dead body thing. Like, what's going on here? Are you frightened of it? Is it a phobia? Is it something that's new? You know, she might have walked into that room having previously been fine and gone, you know what, actually, this just, nope, can't do it. Mm. But actually in the past has been fine. So we need to understand where this is coming from, because if we're going to stand in front of a judge and tell them, judge, this was an impossible situation, and the employee gets in the witness stand and goes, you know what, actually, if I've been given a week off, spoken to a therapist once, twice, I think I'd have been all right. That doesn't sound like an impossible situation.
No.
It doesn't sound like a substantial reason why we've got to end this person's employment. So we want to be confident that if we're making this decision, again, back to my favourite word, that we're being reasonable. So I would always suggest, before we do an SOSR dismissal, that we hold a meeting. We discuss it. We call it an SOSR hearing. We invite them to it. We let them have the chance to be represented by a companion. All the things that we would normally do, the best practice. Why wouldn't we do it in an SOSR situation just because ACAS doesn't mandate it? So we have that meeting, we find our reasonable grounds, we talk about it. Employee might turn around and go, yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to become a florist. Maybe not because they do funerals.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Do you know what? Nail tech.
No dead fingers and nails.
Yeah, I'm gonna be a driving instructor. So maybe it might be that the employee goes, yes, you know what, this is an impossible situation. But it's important that we have that meeting so that we're de-risking the decisions that we're making by making them in collaboration with the employee. And the key thing we need to remember with SOSR is it's with notice. We're not dismissing this person without notice. So if you've got someone who punches someone else in the workplace, and we're saying it's gross misconduct and we're dismissing without notice.
Gone.
Yeah. They're not being paid their notice period. SOSR, they haven't done anything wrong. We're not saying we're punishing you with termination. We're just going, we all started out with the best of intentions, but an impossible situation has arisen that often can be no one's fault.
It's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate. We've got this substantial reason why your employment can't continue. Mm-hmm. What's really important is that we don't use this as kind of the HR bin.
Okay.
So this is the HR junkyard sometimes, mm-hmm. where someone will say, either because they want the opportunity to use it, they want to do an SOS or dismissal because they've not done one for a while, or they've got something that they can't quite work out what it is.
Let's cop out and put SOS out.
Yeah, is it conduct? Is it capability? You know, what is it? We've got to be really clear that the reason that we're dismissing for and the reason why employment can't continue is substantial.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer impossible situation because I think if we set that bar really high, we're less likely then to fail the legal test. Whereas if we go, oh, it's got to just be a big issue. Well, no, it doesn't. It's got to be that substantial. It's got to be an impossible situation. This isn't just an easy, you know, as you called it, a cop out for us to be able to dismiss.
It sounds like it requires a lot more detail.
A lot of detail and a lot of thought. And that, I think, is where sometimes employers trip up with this, is that because we don't have that mandated procedure, they think that it's a quick way through.
Have you got like your own process for it then?
I generally expect my clients, if they want to do SOSR, to follow the structure of a disciplinary process. So we investigate the issue. We want to understand what's going on. We invite them to a formal hearing. So we allow them to have a companion. We give them notice. We enclose any evidence or documentation that we're going to refer to. We tell them what the meeting's going to be about, what we're going to discuss. When they come to the meeting, we allow them to have their say. If they want to fight for their employment, we let them. We let them have their say.
Mm-hmm.
We don't make the decision at the meeting. We adjourn, we consider it, and then we set out our reasons in writing and we give them the right to appeal. That, in terms of process, should be the minimum that we should be following with any dismissal.
It's bulletproof, aren't I?
Yeah.
Yeah, can't have no judge telling you that you haven't done your due diligence
exactly.
and what have you.
Yeah.
I mean, that covers the fifth question. It was going to be, how can employers ensure fairness and avoid discrimination claims when dismissing someone under that?
So discrimination's a really interesting one, because with this one, if someone was saying that this phobia was caused by something mental health related, we'd potentially have to look at reasonable adjustments. So it's not a get out of jail free card just because we're using SOSR. We've still got to consider, you know, is there anything we can put in place to alleviate this? Is it an impossible situation? Impossible situations suggest we can't get out of it. So if we're going to nail our colours to that mask, we've got to be clear on it. In this situation, we couldn't make those reasonable adjustments. We couldn't guarantee that we'd send a trainee paramedic on an ambulance to a location where there's no dead people.
No, you can't
do it.
That.
You just can't do it.
She's in the wrong job, isn't she? She's in the wrong job.
Yeah.
Square pegs, round holes.
And it's not her fault. It's not a criticism.
Just unfortunate.
Provided it arose after she applied. Unless she thought, you know, some people do feel that immersive therapies are the more that you do something, that you become more resilient to it. Back to my bees, because I don't have them yet.
Back to your bee.
Yeah, because I don't have them yet, Fritz. Apparently, not if you're allergic, don't do this if you're allergic, you may die. The more you get stung by bees, so if they sting you, the more it happens, the kind of more resilient to it you get.
Oh, less.
So like, they go from kind of like, my arm's going to fall off, oh my goodness, worst thing that ever happened, to be like, nah, stung again.
That's going to be you in a year or two.
Yeah. With all my honey and all my like candles and soap and stuff.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. So yeah, the immersive thing. So maybe she, sorry, I was way off on a tangent again. Maybe she thought, you know, if I'm around dead people all the time, but in which case, go get a job in a morgue or a funeral home, you know. It's, if you really want to kind of immerse yourself.
Go full.
In it. Yeah.
Not like a bit.
Yeah.
Because they might, when you're a paramedic, they're not always dead.
No, but it's very rewarding work as well, I suppose. But it was an interesting career choice if this was something that had always been present.
It's the kind of thing you should probably know about as well.
Yeah, and testing out immersion therapy in employment, probably not.
Crazy.
Probably not the
best.
In my
opinion, that is. That's a risk.
It is a risk.
It's a risk and it's wasting time.
Yeah.
But at the same time...
And she was invested in the paramedic course. Remember, this was someone at university.
Oh, she...
Who
like,
was spending
career.
Money. Yeah, so this was going to be a career. So... And this is one of those, I don't actually know what happened to her in the end, whether she stayed the course or changed and did something else.
Terrible misjudgment.
Terrible decision.
Terrible decision to make. That is our first sort of story.
Mm-hmm.
The second one we're going to cover is a husband and wife who work together in quite a small, concise business. 10 or 11 people, was it? Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so small workplace.
Not very many people. And the husband had an affair with someone who was very junior
mm-hmm.
in the same place.
Yeah.
And this conjured up its own saucer.
its own SOSIC, yes, its own SOSR situation. This one kind of spilled out of there. We had some SOSR, we also had some disciplinary stuff going on here. This one was a bit of a mess. So as you've rightly said, small business, I think there were 10 people. Of those 10, three end up involved in a relationship. Not all together, it's not a throuple.
It's triangle.
Yeah, love triangle. Mm. Husband, wife, and mistress, for lack of a better word.
That's the correct word.
That husband has been playing away with behind his wife's back. Wife finds out.
Of course she does.
Of course she does. And then, for lack of a better term, all hell breaks loose in this workplace. It becomes a very, very, very toxic environment. I believe the two women exchanged blows.
At work.
At work. Mistress slashed the wife's tires. Husband tried to have the wife dismissed. Wife raised a grievance against both of them. It became just this web of mess. I think in response to the wife's grievances, both the mistress and the husband raised counter grievances. It became this toxic, messy, nightmarish situation. So when I get asked this, so workplace affairs, relatively common. I mean, I shouldn't be so flippant about it, but that's it happens all the time. Not at Heroes. Doesn't happen at Heroes. But this, so it, look, everybody's probably heard about somebody who has either met someone at work or
guilty.
Or you know, pre-internet dating, that was one of the most common ways of meeting somebody would be at work. So this is something that is relatively common. The fallout of the behaviour afterwards, maybe not so much. And I often get asked in this situation then, right, we've determined somebody's got to go. How do we decide who's going? And as this should not be the case, and I hate to have to hang my hat on this statistic. I don't agree with it at all. But more often than not, it typically tends to be the guy who's in the more senior position, the woman in the more junior. If mistress is in the same company, whatever. Oh, sorry, if the wife's in the same company and all, that tends to be a bit more unusual. It's normally when an affair is broke or a relationship is broken down. More often than not, the question I'm asked is, can we dismiss her?
The wife?
Or the mistress.
The mistress, okay.
So say, in this situation, take the love triangle out of the situation. So we're in a situation where we've got a guy, meets someone at work, and the relationship breaks down. Mm-hmm. The question I'm often asked is, can we get rid of her?
Because he's more senior.
Because he's more senior, or because it could be, or typically, and this, again, this is just trends. It doesn't mean it's right. It often tends to be a man in the more senior position who's then had a relationship with somebody more junior. And my question often then is, why does she have to go?
Yeah, absolutely.
What has she done wrong?
He's encroached, arguably.
And particularly in a situation where we don't have a policy against relationships at work.
Yeah.
They haven't broken any rules. Say this isn't an affair situation. Why does she have to go?
I think it's a moral thing now.
Yeah.
Well, that's what you say.
So if he's uncomfortable because, you know, he's done something that's a bit too close to home. But more often than not, the question that comes to me is, we want her to go.
Ugh.
Which in itself is potentially sex discrimination.
Have you had it the other way around where senior woman, junior male?
I've never had to deal with that.
It's never happened.
I have never, it probably has done, but not, I have never ever been called on to advise in a situation.
I'd be interested
like
to see stats on how that works as well.
Yeah.
Compared to what you're
I don't
saying.
Think there's people collecting stats on relationship breakdowns though, and where women are trying to force more junior men out. We could start it, maybe. Yeah. So in this situation then, where we've got husband, wife, and mistress, husband wanted wife removed.
Oh, whack.
So he's cheated on her, all hell's broken loose. He wants the wife out. The mistress also wants the wife out. And everybody's behaviour is starting to descend below the acceptable company line.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give the spoiler.
Go on.
Which is, we dismissed all three of them.
Yeah, you take out the trash.
Yeah, we didn't decide between them. We did no gender differentiation. We like got that. Rid of all three of them.
I like that.
Because whilst, okay, where we've got the punch up and where we've got the tyres being slashed, yes, we do have some disciplinary stuff going on. We were in this impossible situation in a company of 10 people where three couldn't be in the same room together. Where they were, there were screaming matches going on.
Ooh.
I think things got thrown across the office at one point. And there were seven people basically running for cover, going, what is going to happen today? It became so distracting, the business practically came to a standstill. And the business owners, they're not marriage counsellors. They're not here to unpick this absolute mess. And they were pretty confident after conversations with all three of them that this wasn't going to resolve overnight. They were pretty confident this was a totally impossible situation. Therefore, we're looking at an SOSR dismissal. Now, we got a lawyer's letter off him, and we got a lawyer's letter off the mistress. The wife, I think the wife was, as much as she was the wrong party in all of this, she was the happiest just to kind of get out of the situation.
Rid of it. Yeah, wash your hands.
But we had two lawyer's letters. And thankfully, this was one of those situations where when we dismissed for SOSR, we also did the whole, if we hadn't dismissed you for SOSR, it's likely we would have dismissed you on conduct grounds.
Right, okay.
Because...
the behaviour afterwards.
There was the behaviour that went on. Now, where the employer struggled with this one was the punch-up notwithstanding. That's generally considered to be gross misconduct, is where the line fell in terms of when something was gross misconduct. Now, me sitting here in a lawyer's position, I'd say slashing tyres, probably getting...
it's illegal, isn't it, outside of work
illegal,
anyway.
It's criminal damage, you know, throwing things across the office, that sort of thing. But there's an exercise that you have to go through, particularly in a situation like this where emotions are really heightened, everybody's kind of, you know, piling in with an opinion, that we've got to take that step back and be reasonable. Like I always say, take a breath, step back and think, actually, am I reasonable in what I'm doing here? Is this really gross misconduct, or am I so tied up in the situation that I can't see right from left?
Yeah, you don't want to be in the middle of it, can't see the sort of wood from the trees.
So this is why we put into the software the disciplinary decider.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am still waiting for this to be given a better name. Disciplinary decider, just, I don't know, it just feels very boring. There's got to be a jazzier name for it. So yeah, if you're listening or watching and you see the little demonstration that we're about to do, if you can think of a better name for the disciplinary decider, you let us have it. So we're going to do some, I don't know, visual magic.
Yeah, there's going to be something here it is. There, isn't there?
Hopefully it's going to appear.
Yeah.
Right here. Am I looking in the right place? I'm one of those people who you know, when you've got like, it's the wrong way around and I couldn't work out before which side my hair was
you're doing
on.
Your hair,
I was looking at the wrong way.
Wrong
this, yeah. So it's appearing here, hopefully right next to me. And this is within our disciplinary process. Mm-hmm. And this helps an employer to regulate that decision-making process. So what we have is our initial clearance check. So that's the box right at the top. And for this situation, so what we're going to do is we're going to take the mistress's situation where we've got the slashing of the tyres.
Mm-hmm.
So she was employed for more than 2 years. We're satisfied that we've followed all the disciplinary process. Is there anything else that's relevant? So flexible working, pregnancy, maternity, choopy, social media related activity. Clue, they're all the higher risk things, things that are going to potentially make us fall down a rabbit hole. Okay. So if we tick that, we're going to be raising our risk profile.
Mm-hmm.
How certain are we that the conduct took place? Well, I'm going to say absolutely certain because we caught her on CCTV doing it. She practically brandished the knife for us before she went in there. So we're absolutely certain. Okay. Now, the options that we've got here are very certain. So there might have been a witness who saw something, fairly certain, some over 50% sure. Can't say 50-50. Could have happened, might not have done. I'm not really sure. I don't really have anything to support it, or I'm actually convinced it didn't happen. So okay. we need to check, you know, how sure are we that this happened? How serious is it? Is it as serious as it gets? We can no longer trust this person. It's very serious. We can't risk any repeat of the conduct, and I don't see how we can recover the situation. Quite serious. It's bad, but not the worst. Not so serious. We can get over it. Sets a bad example. Not serious, but it's against good procedure. It's not. It's just annoying. Slashing tyres. It's not just annoying. Say it's also a bit more serious. It doesn't just set a bad example to slash someone's tyres. Say it's not so serious, we can get over it. Can we get over it?
No.
It's kind of violent,
they're expensive,
I would say.
As well, tyres.
Quite serious. Conduct is bad, but it's not the worst. I think we're a bit more than that. Maybe we're getting there.
I'd go up one more, mate.
Very serious. We can't risk a repeat, and I don't see how we can recover the situation.
I think that's
think
the
it's
one.
There?
I think that's the money.
Could be as serious as it gets. Maybe, you know, I mean,
I don't know. That could be more serious.
I'd say that's probably where we've got some decision to make. And as you can see, this is where we're asking people to implement judgment. This is not AI decision making. We're still having to apply our own judgments.
AI would be wrong.
We'd be wrong at this point. We're not there yet.
We've tested it.
And then, was anyone injured? No. Is any money involved? No. Is it a breach of health and safety?
I think probably not.
No. It's running around the car park with a knife.
It's not safe.
Probably not safe. Are we say right? I'll ask you this: are we accusing her of a health and safety breach?
No,
probably not. We're not going to tick that one. Was it witnessed by a customer or the member of the public? No. Was it a person in a position of responsibility? No. Is it classed as fraud or theft? No. Is deception involved? I mean, she did deny it, actually. She lied about it, so...
Would that apply to the whole situation, though? Do you know what I mean? Like, is deception involved? Are you just applying this to her doing it?
To the allegation that we're talking about. So we take the specific allegation through. So when we asked her, did you slash her tyres? She said no. She's tried to deceive us. Are drugs or alcohol involved? No. Are we considering informing the police? Yes.
Yeah.
Criminal damage. Is discrimination a factor? No. Is it a sexual offence? No. Does it involve violence or threats of violence?
Yeah, I think it's quite violent.
Slashing someone's tyres, probably. It's a threat of violence. Does it involve stalking or harassment? I'm going to say yes.
It's a bit of harassment, eh?
It's a bit harassing.
Bit of harassment.
Has it resulted in another employee leaving or the loss of a customer? Now, she did leave, but not because of this. Okay. So I'm not going to tick that one. Okay. Has it happened before? No.
No.
But the behaviour was classed as either, so scrolling, very serious, or above. So it's first offence, but it's very serious. Has the employee expressed any remorse? No, but she did admit that the conduct was wrong. So she refused to apologise when we pointed it out. She said, yes, it's wrong to slash people's tyres, but I'm not going to apologise.
Do you know what? I quite admire that.
You want to give us some points for that, don't you?
She died on that hill.
So now we move on to mitigation. Does it excuse the behaviour? No, it doesn't.
No, God, no, no, no.
Does it provide an explanation for the way that she behaved? No.
No?
There wasn't a precursor to this that would explain
I'm grasping at straws here.
Yeah. Is the blame shared?
No.
So this did come after the punch-up.
What is it, a reaction?
So, I mean, I suppose we could say it provides an explanation for the way she behaved. Is the blame shared? I'd say one or the other. I'm not going to say the blame shared because that's kind of victim shaming, but I'd say it probably does provide an explanation for why she did it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean we're excusing it. Is the person not the ringleader, not relevant? Is disability a factor? No. Is there long service? Yes, there is. And she had a clean record. Has she stated anything that would reduce sanctions, such as significant remorse or devastation? No. She was, like you say, dying on that hill. We move on to aggravating factors. In addition to breaking company rules, it's also illegal. While she denied it, she didn't try and conceal it ultimately. She did lie, though. Was there any verbal abuse? No. Did it cause workplace disruption? It did. Did it affect another employee in a negative way? Yes. Does it set a poor example? So she wasn't a senior person, so we're not going to go with the setting the poor example here. If it was committed by someone else before, was the outcome different? So this was the first time someone had slashed someone's tyres, so we don't need to worry about consistency in this situation.
You don't, not, wouldn't you?
Has the employee blown the whistle? No. And does any part of the allegations relate to disability or a protected characteristic? No. So drum roll, let's see what the disciplinary decider suggests. Dismissal without notice.
And yes, that was where
slashing,
you landed.
That's where we landed. Dismissing someone without notice, likely to be fair, where we've got someone who slashed someone's tyres and lied about it.
Who'd have thought it?
The risk outcome, however, we're saying medium risk. She's been there 2 years. So we've got to make sure that we followed a procedure and that we are confident as an employer that that sanction is reasonable. So we've got some mitigation in there. We've got long service, clean record. We've got an explanation for why she's behaved in this way, that we've got these heightened emotions. So even though this is saying, in principle, this is very serious behaviour, us as an employer, we have still got to be confident that we think it's gross misconduct.
Okay.
So it's giving us some guidance, but it's not saying it's okay to do this. It's saying, make sure you followed your procedure and make sure that you think that this is serious enough conduct to dismiss somebody. Mm-hmm. Now, in this situation, that was our in the alternative. So in this situation, we had the SOSR. Situation was toxic. Somebody's got to go. But then in the alternative, we'd have likely dismissed for gross misconduct, which is what her lawyer was told when we got the nasty letter. That I think he paid for, because we got one off him as well.
That was a really good example, though, because that did what you did.
It did, yeah. And we that's exactly what
it's
we said to her.
As if you designed
it's
it.
It's like I wrote the algorithm.
Oh,
but, yeah. But what I call it is the breaks.
Okay.
That where someone's going to get run away with something and think, actually, you know what, this is way more serious than perhaps somebody else might think it is. It makes us go through that thought process. You still have to select. You've still got to be honest about the situation.
Yeah,
you've still
got
to apply thought to it. It's still very user input dependent, mm-hmm. but it's making you go through the process that lawyers are thinking about when we're thinking, is this gross misconduct or is it not, when we're putting our advice together. And it also means then if you ring me, there's loads of stuff we can discuss there. Mm. So actually, if you think something is very serious, I can say, okay, why did you pick that rather than the other box? Mm. Explain it to me. So it gives us a really good structure for when it comes to actually taking advice on what it is that you're doing.
Great for collating and collecting that data to take to, if need be, a tribunal.
Yeah.
I imagine.
Yeah.
Thank you. That went better than I thought it was going to go, you know? We'll do that again.
Yeah.
Because that went well.
Do you think?
I do, yeah, genuinely, yeah. I think that went very well.
So that's obviously for people who are watching. Hopefully we've talked through it in enough detail that people understand. Mm. And it's not just around selling the software, buy the software. It's not just around selling the software. It's about what is that thought process when we're getting to dismissal. So if it is an impossible situation, why is it impossible? Explain yourself. Why is it that we're saying that actually we've got nowhere to go with this other than getting someone out the door? If we think something is disciplinary, well, why are we saying it's serious? Why are we saying this person's employment's got to end? And that's the sort of thought process that we need to be going through.
That's it. Time's out for today.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun. That was pretty free roaming, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't ask any questions at all, but we kind of, they were there as a guide and we covered a lot of information there. Went through the disciplinary decider to be confirmed name-wise. But yeah, good fun.
Yeah. So hopefully you've got a good understanding of SOSR, even though you're going to continue to call it SOSA.
Oh, till the day I die. You better believe it.
And look, we've covered some really technical stuff today, so I feel like hopefully we've added a bit of value to anyone that's listening.
Because we never normally do that, do we?
And the takeaways as well. You know, if you're scared of dead bodies, don't go get a job as a paramedic. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to have an affair at work, don't do all the stuff that we talked about today. Actually, don't have an affair at work. It's
don't
wrong.
Do it if you're married.
Don't do it if you're married. But yeah, don't then have a fist fight, throw stuff across the office, slash someone's tires, and then try and get your wife dismissed. Don't do that.
No. I thought we're teaching people to behave here a bit, aren't we?
Yeah.
Maybe we should.
It's kind of, yeah, I do sometimes say HR with crowd control. You know, I think it's one of those, you know, making sure that your policies and your procedures are up to date. And I think actually we probably can't talk about affairs in the workplace without talking about e-learning, sexual harassment. If you want to know what's acceptable in the workplace, if you want to know about where the lines are for relationships at work, if you're thinking of starting a relationship at work, do the e-learning that we have on sexual harassment, because it's really good. And we've got thousands of employees who've done it. I can't believe it that we've written this course. It's on this e-learning platform and
you've
thousands of people. Sorry,
you've
thanks for that. Are we still doing the hashtag girl boss thing after the last episode?
It's appropriate. The shoe fits.
Thousands of employees have been through it.
It's mad, isn't it?
And seeing the benefit of it. So
it's
mad. Please do it. It's mega cheap. It reduces your risk if you're an employer, and it tells people how to behave.
It takes you 40 minutes, if that.
Yeah.
And it's done. Yeah.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. We've got some great stuff in the pipeline. So we're looking at some more guests coming on. And, you know, because of the nature of what we do, the queries come in every day. So, you know, we're never short on content things to discuss. So that's all from me. And thank you for listening.
All good fun. Thank you. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers. Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in. And don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media, or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect. But by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier, and more productive workplaces.